All right, how's everybody doing? It's Wednesday. It's Wednesday. Jeez, it's Wednesday. Beautiful Chicago. I can't believe it. Hopefully everybody is doing well. I'm Mike Jeff for Chicago Jazz Magazine, chicagojazz.com, and of course you are watching Chicago Music Revealed. It is a pleasure to have you here. It's sort of raining, sunny kind of day. That's the theme song, of course, thanks to Craig Pilo out there in L.A. I gotta love it. You know, there's a lot of heavy hitters on that theme song. I know I've mentioned it before, but there really are. The keyboard player for Jefferson Starship is on there. Craig Pilo playing drums. He's played with Frankie Valli for 15 years. Edgar Winter. The list goes on. Billy Vera. I can continue on. But anyways, thanks to Craig Pilo for the theme song. I always have to thank him at the beginning. And of course, you are watching Chicago Music Revealed episode 59. Yes, Tracy Oliver, happy hump day. I appreciate you always shouting out. He's always the first one to comment. Of course, if you like what you're seeing, you like what you're hearing, comment. We are over watching the comments on Chicago Music Revealed on Facebook. So if you're on Chicago Jazz Magazine's Facebook page, we love it that you're there. But head over to Chicago Music Revealed, and we'll be able to reply to any of your comments when you leave them, because we're streaming from that one, and we're cross-post Chicago Music Revealed. So I encourage everyone to head over there and say hi. We are going to have a great show today. But before I get to that, of course, I have to also tell everyone that I'm not only the founder of Chicago Jazz Magazine, chicagojazz.com, but also the director of programming and entertainment at the Epiphany Center for the Arts, opening soon. We are going to be kicking things off in September. And as I mentioned yesterday, we are in phase four. We are setting up massively COVID-safe systems over there, I assure you. So things are going to move right along, hopefully. Everybody stays safe. Everybody stays healthy. Everybody stays socially distant from each other so that when we get to September, when we get to August, we can open up some of these incredible clubs again, get some people in there, and we can start enjoying live music in person all together and helping out not only the clubs, but all these musicians that have been struggling throughout this entire situation, which I know that has been happening. And also these photographers. Now, my first guest today, my only guest today, I don't want to say my guest, Harvey Tillis. Now, Harvey Tillis, he is a photographer that is not specifically live music, is not his base of income, thank goodness. So he has been a world-renowned photographer, which we're going to talk about. But he is one of those guys on this Chicago music scene who you probably have seen but might not have talked to because he takes these incredible shots. You can see him as at the Jazz Record Art Collective. Chris Anderson, who was on yesterday, he is there normal times, almost every single performance. And he is always kind enough and generous enough to allow us to use some of his photography for Chicago Jazz Magazine and chicagojazz.com. And it's been a pleasure having Harvey photograph and cover some of these incredible events like the Blues Fest, the Chicago Jazz Fest, and many others, and contribute back to Chicago Jazz Magazine. But let's bring him on right now. There he is, Harvey Tillis. How are you, sir?
I'm excellent, sir. Thanks for having me. Thanks for that. And hold up, I'm looking around to say something about me.
Well, I mean, I didn't even get into. I mean, we could talk. I can talk about you.
Don't get into it. So
let's talk a little bit before we get into the photography aspect. But I mean, you are somebody that's used to being out on the scene a lot. I wouldn't say seven nights a week, but a majority of the week, seeing live performances, taking photos at Green Mill, Jazz Showcase, obviously the Jazz Record Art Collective, the Fulton Street Collective, and many other places, and when there's festivals and all that stuff. I mean, this must have come to a shock to your system when all of a sudden everything just stopped. So how have you been holding up? How has everything been going on in your world here in the quarantine situation we're all been in?
I've been in quarantine. It's been a real withdrawal. It's really been a tough time.
Yeah.
As I'm sure it has been for all the musicians. It's just all of a sudden everything stopped, all the plans you have, all the hopes you have, and then it's wrong. I was mentioning earlier that I had a tremendous amount of commercial work set for March.
Mm-hmm.
And one by one, things just stopped. The last one being the day of the event, this multi-day event. And I couldn't believe that they were still going to do it. I expected what ultimately came. I was checking my gear one last time, ready to roll out of here. And here came the phone call. We've canceled the entire multi-day event.
Oh.
So, you know, there's nothing to say, but I'll see you next year, I hope. You know, good luck.
Well, and that's like the majority of your day gig is a lot of the commercial work, right? I mean, you've shot for specific publications in the past, but also you do a lot of freelance conventions and corporate events and things like that, right? Where this entire time, just like a musician, all of the private events, corporate events, galas, weddings, everything that everybody had on the books just ended.
Not weddings. Weddings are serious. It's not weddings anymore. Well, that's a lot of work.
I didn't specifically say you. But I meant a musician.
Everyone should live and be well. Good luck. I'll see you on the other side. But yeah, it's Chicago, so there's tons of events.
Yeah.
A lot of portraits, especially environmental portraits. And documenting what turns out to be developing documentary projects for a handful of nonprofits and some corporations and government agencies. A lot of state of Illinois, well, not so much these days, but there was a ton of business with all 60 different state agencies over the last 8 or 10 years.
You know,
that also has disappeared.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everything just went on hold and it just stopped. And I mean, it's just unbelievable. I mean, how did you, because I mean, you know, you also are used to going out every night. So you have like almost this double life where you go out and all the, you know, all of these great musicians in town. And it's one of those things where it's gotta be fun, but it's completely different than your corporate day lifestyle, because you're going from that element to all of a sudden during normal times, you walk into like Jazz Record Art Collective or in the Green Mill or something. It's a completely different scene. What got you interested in starting to shoot live music like you do?
Always wanted to. Always. When I was a kid, a little bit before, I knew what it was. My folks got Life magazine. Every Thursday, Life magazine came. It was the original black and white Life magazine. And I just pore over the pictures all the time. And there was a series by Alfred Eisenstadt, one of the original four photographers. He had covered conductors of major orchestras all over the world. So here is a kind of a documentary study of these conductors. And when I looked at the pictures, it was like I could hear the music. And I thought, that is so cool. So wouldn't it be neat if I could do that? So that's what I always wanted to do. But of course, I never realized that that's what I always wanted to do. So I did something not related to photography at all for about 15 years. And then it got to a point where I said, you know, I can't do this anymore. So I'm going to be a photographer. And I had no background. I didn't know anything. And I didn't know anyone. And so I went from being somebody with two assistants in a private office to, you know, running out for rolling papers and beer and sweeping floor and coming in early and developing film and, you know, spending a lot of time in the dark room and doing whatever had to be done. So I learned that way.
So you was that with a studio at that point? I mean, did you like grunt work for a photographer to learn the business?
Yeah, I did. I assisted a handful of people who I started to meet through want ads, somebody looking for an assistant, and eventually met one guy that I really enjoyed working for about 6 months, and then another guy who was at the time just a few years older than me, a guy named Tony Gabriel, Gabe, and I just really clicked with him, and he was the right kind of guy for me. I worked for him for 3 years.
Wow.
And he was wonderful. The good part was he was really wonderful and technically superb. The bad news was that it turned out that the kind of work that he did, which was all product work, was not anywhere near what I wanted to do, which was, although I couldn't say it at the time, it was more photo illustration. It was more, people doing things, showing things, telling stories. So I learned from him. I learned all kinds of things from him. And it was really an interesting guy because after 2 years, he worked with a lot of agencies. Mm-hmm. After 2 years, he finally revealed to me that he was blind in one eye. And the eye that was good was colorblind.
Really?
And he was deaf in one ear.
He didn't tell you until you worked with him for 2 years?
Nobody knew. I mean, he's been dead a long time. But nobody knew. I would look at color negative, you know, 4 by 5, 8 by 10, 11 by 14 sepachromes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he would talk with the directors about the color and how it would shift this way and that way. I couldn't see it. Could see it. They could see it. Now I can see it. But remarkable. So he taught me so much. And one other thing that he really was good at, after hours, maybe I got this from him. After hours, after he finished his product work, maybe 8 or 9 o'clock, he'd have some models from a modeling agency come over. And he'd shoot all night long. They'd do all kinds of ideas, fashion, whatever. And I'd come in the morning, there'd be 40 rolls of film that I had to, you know, soup and process and hang up and dry and make contact sheets before he came in at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
So that was my start of the day. But I really learned a lot from him. And another thing in the darkroom that I really, to this day, he's still the gold standard. He would print in the darkroom. He'd make black and white prints, and it was like the images would just shimmer off the paper. They were so alive. So it took me years to approach that level, and now as I work digitally, that's still in the back of my mind. How do I get this picture to just kind of sing a little bit better?
Are you able to? You bring something up that I've been curious about for a while. It's interesting, you know, because there's like one or two photographers that I still know that only shoot on film, and only will never do digital. They only shoot on film. They don't believe that the digital quality can ever get to the point of the actual, you know, film and the proofs, the custom proofs and the processing and all that stuff. I mean, do you think that that's true? I mean, can you replicate what you're talking about right now digitally?
They know more than me. I couldn't care less. I'm happy that I spent decades in the darkroom. I learned a lot. I can do more, and I was good in the darkroom. I was good.
Mm-hmm.
I can do so much more digitally than I could ever do in the darkroom. I love digital photography.
Yeah.
It's amazing. You know, if I was going out with film, what kind of film? Would it be black and white? Would it be color? How fast would it be? How was I going to process this stuff? How long? It was endless stuff that was normal at the time. Now I can take a camera. I can set it from frame to frame, different speeds, different color combinations. All kinds of things can be done in Photoshop, Lightroom. I just love it. I love digital.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, first of all, just to finish up on the film thing, I couldn't even imagine it now because, I mean, I just know when we started Chicago Jazz Magazine, it wasn't all that long ago, and everything was on regular stuff and regular film and everything else. And, you know, it was interesting because I just lost my other camera, so now I'm on this camera. It's interesting because it was always like an extra expense of everything because we had to get the custom proof. We had to do this, we had to do that and everything else. And with digital, all of a sudden it was like, boom, hey, can you send me a picture of this problem? Here you go. I mean, it was like instantaneous. And so I couldn't even imagine going back to film. That's for one. So to your point, I completely agree with you. I mean, give me a break. But second of all, you know, what was the learning curve as far as going from digital, you know, from film to digital on your end? Because, I mean, you know, that happened pretty, you know, when did you finally switch, I guess, is my point.
Here's the thing. I got into photography in 78, I left a career of 15 years to become a photographer. And from 78 to 90, I learned and built a business as a photographer. And in 90, 91, something came along called computers. And suddenly all these companies that I had cultivated as clients had purchased their secretary. They had the girl take care of pictures, and they didn't need me. Oh. So my business that I had cultivated disappeared in 1990. I'm commiserating with a friend who's a video producer at the time. What do I do? He says, there's this new thing called interactive multimedia. So what is it? He says, I have no idea. So I checked it out, and there's a conference in San Francisco that I found out about. I went to. I was the oldest guy there. Everything they talked about, I had no idea what they were talking about. You know, they're talking about everything computer, new time. I'm trying to figure out the difference between RAM and a hard drive. But I came back and I got involved with the internet in 91, 92. And I stayed in that scene until 2004. And suddenly I started getting calls for photography. So from 1992, let's say, to 2004, I was completely away from photography. 2004, I come back and everything's digital. Oh my God, everything has changed. The only thing that hasn't changed is the fee I can charge. I need all new equipment, but the fees are the same.
It's like being a real crash course.
It's a long story. Bottom line is, it was a real crash course.
Well, it's almost like a musician, right? I mean, you know, you go away for 15 years and the gigs still pay the same. It's like, wait a minute, what just happened?
Yeah, it's supposed to be better by 15 years.
Yeah, no, that's not the way it works in the arts, I guess. I should have read the manual before I got into the business.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about your love of live music compared to, you know, your commercial work and your day gig and all that stuff. Let's talk about that. What's the difference between shooting, or what excites you about shooting live music? Because when I talk to you, even when we were just talking offline here for a minute, I mean, you're excited because you're going over to Jazz Record Art Collective. You're going to take some photos. You're going to do some things tonight. It's a private, live stream. Yeah, it's only live stream, but I mean, you're going, and I could tell by talking to you before we came on that you're excited to hear live music again and see it in person and experience it. So what is it about being able to shoot musicians and experience live music live and capture that on film?
Well, it's great. It's just great. I like to feed off of them. For the most part, almost everybody from the younger people in their early 20s to the guys who are, you know, 60, 70, 80 years old. It's a treat to hear them, to hear what they're doing, to see how they're progressing. Sometimes I hear people 4 or 5 months apart while they're a person, and I can hear them get better.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
You know, so there's that. Sometimes I think when I'm shooting and I'm hearing a musician who I really, really like, really respect, I'm thinking, I'm going to try to do as good a job in what I'm doing as they're doing the music. So I kind of play off the music as an inspiration for what I shoot.
Ah.
And then, as it turns out, I've gotten to a point where the kind of commercial jobs I have, I kind of try to bring that same attitude toward them. And although my client base isn't as big as it once was, people I shoot for appreciate that. It's more real. Mm-hmm. It's more alive. And they like that kind of shooting. So it's all kind of come together now.
Yeah.
If you're long enough, if you're alive long enough, you stay vertical long enough, it helps.
All right, so let's tell everybody about this book you did, this incredible book, 10 Years in Space. Now, it's available. I think we should send everybody over harveytillisphotography.com and also harveysphotoart.com. We want to send them both, everybody over there. We're going to link everything up. Now, you did this book, 10 Years in Space, and you shot it exclusively at Evanston Space. And it's, I mean, you know, unbelievable shots of some incredibly world-renowned musicians, and I think you capture that essence. And what you just described is a perfect lead-in to talk about this book, because you're catching people in the act of performance. And when I look at the book, I feel like I'm at the performance. I can feel the passion on their face. I can experience what they're going through when they're playing. So talk a little bit about this concept, because I love the concept, and I know a lot of people have just totally dug the book like I have.
You know, I'm glad that this is recorded, because I'm going to take this section you just said and play it over and over the next time I get kind of bummed out. Okay? actually, it was a happy break that came along. In 2008, photography business slowed down a lot. It's like, oh my God, here we go again.
Yeah.
And I was having lunch with Dave Spector, wonderful friend and great blues man.
Yep.
And he was talking about being part of the start of a new listening room club in Evanston called Space. And would I be interested in maybe coming in and shooting some of the performers? So I said, you know, like, this is my dream. Sure, of course. So I started doing that. And the more I did it, the more I really loved it. Of course, it was a treat to see all these people, whether they were jazz musicians or blues musicians or pop musicians, and plus new people I never heard of, you know, come here. And who was it? Let's see. Tank and the Bangas, which is a relatively recent one. Like, what are you talking about? Tank and the Bangas are pretty good. You should come. And I went to that one, and I learned the hard way that the thing to do when I'm planning on going is asking if there's a, are you taking the tables out? Is this a standing only situation? Because as all the photographers know, I mean, you're constantly dealing with mic stands and music stands and cables and water bottles, and you're jockeying around for some kind of angle that's halfway decent. So yes, this particular one was a standing only. That's the case. I got to get there an hour early so I can be right up against the stage, because if I'm one row back, it's too far back. So I wait and wait and wait, and finally, I don't know what Tank is. So Tank is a woman. She's a short woman. She's a full-figured woman, and she has a head of hair that is also full-figured, and she prefers no lighting. So there's lighting from the top down, and that's it. Well, thus comes my favorite kind of jokey saying: "Light is for wimps." I mean. What do you do? It's showtime. You got to shoot it anyway. So I did. And there was that. But there was so many other, you know, times that were really great to meet people, come across their different scenes. Who was it? Brad Meldow.
Mm-hmm.
He's a really wonderful guy, turns out. But I had been warned ahead of time that this guy's very serious and I don't want to bother him. Of course, he's solo, so I'm not going to be moving around in a club shooting him while he's solo.
Right.
So the thing that I can do, which I don't tell Space about, is come there 2 hours ahead of time when he does a sound check. And you're not supposed to talk with him, but no one was in the room but me and him. So I said, excuse me, would you mind if I just shoot a couple of pictures while you're... Oh, yeah, I couldn't have been a nicer guy. Nicer guy. I'm shooting, and the guys from Space come screaming out at me, don't talk. I said, it's okay. Brad says it's okay. So that's great. It was that kind of stuff. Or, Hiromi. I'm like, who's Hiromi? So I get there, and there's, and the, as a drummer, you wouldn't know this. I forgot who this guy is. He was an English drummer. He had maybe 9 snare drums, all tuned different ways. Then he had a bass player. And she plays a 9-foot Yamaha grand piano. That's in her contract.
Yeah.
So they have to take out the Steinway from Space, take it apart, move it, bring the Yamaha in, tune it. She plays her head off. then they have to take that apart. But I got the whole thing. So those kinds of things are so exciting it's just wonderful. It's wonderful to see them. Wonderful to see them and be there and see the magic that happens when they play.
You brought up that one point too about the sound check, because you just recently, over this past holiday season, you went to the Auditorium Theater to shoot Too Hot to Handle, and you went to the sound check, and you wanted to go to the sound check because then you can move around, you can do anything you want, you're not getting in the way of the audience. I never thought of it that way, but that's like actually a great little tip if you can do it, because I mean, you're right. You can do anything. There's always a sound check, so you're able to move around and catch people in some very casual, casual poses because they're not thinking about anything. But also, you have the freedom. You're not going to block any audience members and all of that. I mean, how many other photographers do that? I don't know a lot of photographers that do that that even think that way. But that's like one of those things that helps you catch these musicians in different moments. And you get to have a different connection with them, so that I'm sure later on that night when Brad Meldow looked up and you were taking pictures, he didn't give a crap at all. That's Harvey's over there. Who cares?
Taking pictures. That's the point. I can't do that. Yeah. I went once to see Gary Burton, and it was going to be impossible. It was just, I mean, you can do it if you want to be a jerk.
Yeah.
But I don't want to be a jerk. So the last time Gary Burton came through with Makoto Ozone,
mm-hmm.
I went for the soundtrack. And this was Gary Burton's final tour.
Right. Yep.
Because he's got some physical problems, mental problems. Well, he's got some problems. And I was able to, he was playing. It was really cool. He doesn't move around with his set of vibes. So they ran vibes for him. And he started to play the vibes. And he remembered the place that had been supplying him with vibes the last time he was in Chicago. He remembered this particular what's the right term, set of vibes,
mm-hmm.
and what the drawbacks were of them and how to work around them. I mean, the guy was incredible. He's playing like he's dead serious, and I'm literally standing next to him, crouching down over the vibe shooting. I mean, you can't do that when it's live, when it's real.
No.
It's cool.
So where can everybody pick up this book?
I just reordered another couple of cards. So it'd be a couple of weeks, but yeah, I'm the guy. You can order them through my website, which is harveytillisphotography.com, and there's a link right there. Whatever it says, I've tried to make it clear that the book is for sale. When you go to that page, you get a whole rundown of what it is. It's mm-hmm. 20 bucks, So
yeah,
what the heck?
Well, hey, you know what? You can steal this part of the interview as well. I completely suggest everyone watching this and everyone watching this on the replay and listening to it on the podcast, you go pick up a copy of this. So harveytillisphotography.com. When I first saw it, I was just like, I couldn't put it down. And I know you'll have that same experience. So definitely check that out. Now, before I let you go, we had Chris Anderson on yesterday, and he has an entire, I'm holding the page up from yesterday. This is the list. You can't see it. But this is the list of all the performances that he's got coming up at the Jazz Record Art Collective. Now, I know you from the start of the series, you love going to this series more than anything else. I always get photos from Harvey every time there's a performance, and it's, you're so nice to be able to allow Chicago Jazz Magazine to use it, and we always post that. But then you also send it out to all of the musicians that are there, and they can use it for little promo things on social media and all of that good stuff as well. What sparked your interest about this specifically? Because this seems like, as I was telling Chris last night, I mean, this is a really unique series, first off. And I don't know of any other series that's an ongoing series where they take some of these classic recordings and the musicians' work and they put it all together and put everything and actually replicate the entire show. But then also, with the visual artist there as well, and you capture everything. Is this something that was so unique? You went the first time and just got hooked?
I loved being able to find this place nearby where I live.
Mm-hmm.
Not to complain, going anywhere, but it's convenient. And Chris is just a really a special welcoming person. So I was able to start showing up. And then I feel it's only fair if he allows me and the musicians allow me to photograph, the least I could do is give him pictures, you know, that are relatively usable. And so I try to get out low-res pictures. Anyone that gets them, you know, God bless you. Use it if you can, any and all. And if you need high-res versions, then let me know. And for the most part, the price is nil or small. You're going to have some kind of massive whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, just to be reasonable, thanks for letting me do this. This is really exciting. Some of these people are just thrilling to hear, you know, and it's exciting to see. So what the heck, you know?
Well, you've been able to see a majority of the performances over there, and you've gotten to know all these musicians. And, you know, now that they're doing the live stream, I mean, I thank God they're doing the live stream because they're getting live music happening again in Chicago and helping to support the Fulton Street Collective, obviously, but also these musicians that have all been not working, and you know, the fact that you're able to, it's like artists helping artists when you give them photographs because they're so appreciative, because I know how difficult it is to get decent photos of yourself when you're playing or just doing anything in general. So it's so nice that you're able to do that. But, you know, Chris has got that happening, but I contribute some of the success of the popularity to the Harvey Tillis photos that go up and get pushed out on social media and on Chicago Jazz Magazine, because you are able to capture the excitement in the room, and you are also able to capture the entire atmosphere of what's happening, which a lot of times, as you know, going to a club, going to a venue, that's part of the battle for people to say, oh my God, I don't even know what the inside of this place is going to look like. I don't know what it's like. Where's the parking? Where's this? But you actually break that barrier down and allow people to get inside of this. So I think you've helped to help out that series in a big way.
Well, if that's the case, then hats off to Alfred Eisenstadt, who's the photographer all those years ago that impressed me so much that that's what I wanted to do. So to hear what you just said is good. It's good.
Good. Nice. I'm going to tell everybody, when you can go see Jazz Record Art Collective or the Green Mill or the Jazz Showcase or Andy's or Martyrs or Blues on Halsted or Buddy Guys or anywhere else, please get out. Please support these theaters, these venues, because they're going to be capped at 50 and less. So they need to make sure they have capacity crowds every night to make sure that it's even worth them opening up. But also it goes back to the artists and the musicians performing as well. And I know Harvey will be there covering all of it for Chicago Jazz Magazine, hopefully, as usual, because you're so nice to contribute to the magazine. And also, maybe there'll be a new book, because this could be a really cool concept for the next 12 months. Whenever all the venues are capacity limited, you could come out with a new book, some hip title about quarantine, COVID-19, and music. I don't know, but I'm sure you'll come up with something.
That's a great idea, yeah. Just turn it right out.
All right, so everybody head over to harveytillisphotography.com, harveysphotoart.com, 10 Years in Space by Harvey Tillis. I recommend everybody pick that up. Harvey, thanks so much for jumping on today. It is a pleasure. It was great catching up with you, as usual. And, hopefully once things shake out a little bit, we'll have to have you come back down to Bridgeport, and we'll have to go have lunch again and have a meeting of the minds again in person at some point.
And a beef sandwich, too.
Ah, there you go. That's right. Beef sandwich. That's right. All right. Good talking to you, Harvey. Thanks for jumping on today. Take care. Harvey Tillis. Boy, I'm telling you, everybody head over. Everybody go check out Harvey Tillis, photography.com, harveysphotoart.com. 10 Years in Space. You will not be disappointed. Hopefully everybody enjoyed that interview. I could have talked to him for another hour because I didn't go down the road, but I mean, you know, he's done photography that we could talk about for many, many hours, and he's met a lot of people and he's done a lot of very cool stuff. So hopefully we'll have him back on the show at some point and we can do a part two and talk about some of the very cool photo shoots he's done during his day gig as well. So, all right. Thanks again to Harvey Tillis for being on. Thanks again for you for watching. And tomorrow, a very special show, the Jazz Institute's Heather Ireland Robinson is going to be joining me. We're going to be talking all about the jazz camp that they're going to have virtually coming out in July. So we're going to be pushing that out and talking all about that. And also all of the other big plans that the Jazz Institute have had to shift into the online scene. So I'm looking forward to talking to Heather tomorrow. And also on Friday, Red Alert, special Blues and Beyond Fridays, 6 p.m. with Dave Katzman. Special guest this week, Jimmy Johnson's going to be on. The legend, Jimmy Johnson. The 91-year-old Jimmy Johnson? I don't know. You wouldn't know how old he was. He looks 30, and he's going to tell us some great stories. I interviewed him last year before the Blues Fest, and, man, he's got some good stories. It was fun catching up with him last year, so this year I can't wait to talk to him. He does a live stream as well. We're going to talk to him about that. He does a weekly live stream and a whole lot more, so that's Blues and Beyond, Chicago Blues and Beyond, this Friday with Dave Katzman and special guest Jimmy Johnson. So, as I always say, tomorrow, 6 p.m. right here, tell your neighbors, tell your family, call the grandkids, Chicago Music Revealed right here, 6 p.m., the Jazz Institute of Chicago. We will have a great conversation. I thank everyone for watching, everyone listening. Please share this. Please like this. Send this out. Tell everyone about it. Until next time, I will see you tomorrow on the broadcast, 6 p.m.